You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible. Oh, my mama. Oh, my mama made it, man. Anything's possible.
Rainy days, jump shot, fade away. It's the best Celtics podcast day to day. I get excited about it every night about it. A real C's fan wouldn't want to live their life without it. Banner 18 in the making, we gotta make it. Best squad in the East and still we can't get complacent. Most winning franchise, so the history's ancient. You could tell them other guys to go and plan a vacation. Yeah, Corrales, Packard, and Jay King. Locked on, trying to get the 18th ring. The most in-depth coverage that you ever gonna hear. Well respected in the city like Russell's career. It's Raining Jay. Millie.
Welcome back. This is the Locked On Celtics podcast. We want to thank you for making this part of your daily routine. We're here for you Monday through Friday, and this is the Monday show. We're hoping this is going to be a good Monday. Game 4 tonight, Celtics-Bucks. Celtics hoping to tie it up after Game 3, losing at home, a tough one, 123-116. We didn't do a podcast after that game. So this is our essentially post-game podcast, plus a couple of other things, including potential return for Marcus Smart. We're the Raining Jays, John Corrales of MassLive.com, joined by the kid, Jay King of The Athletic. All of you new listeners, want to thank you all for checking us out. Subscribe to the show. Download the new Himalaya podcast app. Subscribe to us, and then it will start curating feeds for you so you can start to discover other new great podcasts. Of course, all of them across the Locked On Podcast Network are worth checking out. Jay, let's start with Game 3 because we didn't talk about that. The big story coming out of Game 3 was the officiating. And I'm still on Twitter going back and forth with people about the officiating. So let's just talk about that right off the bat. There were obviously questionable calls. There were definitely calls that may have changed the...
Jaylen Brown's fifth was bad.
Jaylen Brown's fourth was not great either. That was not exactly a great call.
See, I thought that was a charge.
You did? Because I thought he just kind of jumped sideways into him, and I didn't like that call.
I thought even if he was still moving, like, he beat him to the spot and anticipated Jaylen's move perfectly. I was cool with that call. I thought most of the calls weren't that bad. I think what bothered so many people is that the Bucks just got a lot of calls, but that's what happens when you have Giannis. Sure. And the Celtics haven't ever been a team that draws a lot of free throws. They're a team that settles for a lot of jump shots, and Giannis did no settling in Game 3. Giannis just went straight to the hoop, and the one when, like, Shemi Ojeleye was falling backwards and stripped it, I thought that was bad. But for the most part, Giannis was just punishing guys. And the Celtics didn't hold up well. Mm-mm. And I thought especially, like, their offense deteriorated after that. They stopped passing the ball like they did early on. And it just snowballed, kind of like it did in Game 2.
Yes, it did. So I think one of the big things, if you want to look at the officiating, was that the fact that Jaylen got the five fouls, that hurt them because it led to extended Shemi Ojeleye minutes. As a proponent of Shemi Ojeleye minutes, I think too many of them can be bad. He needs to play in spots and buy the Celtics time so they can get some decent defense on Giannis, which he did play some decent defense on Giannis. He had a couple of possessions where he stood his ground and forced the miss, and that's exactly what he should be doing. What you don't want is too many minutes of Ojeleye out there being part of the offense beyond catching and shooting. That offensive foul, even though Giannis did have like the back end of his heel on the restricted circle there, I'm not gonna lose my mind over the back half of his heel being on that thing. That's like the most technical of technicalities. He was well in position. That was an obvious charge. Like, I'm fine with that. So getting Jaylen Brown that fifth foul, again, horrible call. I don't know what the hell Cain Fitzgerald was thinking there, but And it's funny because he actually put his hands up. He's like, okay, okay, okay. Like he was almost apologetic that he made that call. I don't know what was going
Marcus
on.
Marcus Smart was so mad on the bench.
Was he? I didn't see him.
He was steaming mad on the bench. Man, he was frustrated with that one.
That one. I mean, everybody was. But again, that did, like I said, change the personnel that was on the floor. But even though Shemmy was on the floor, the Celtics did have opportunities to make some shots. And I think the late third quarter run wasn't anything, it didn't have anything to do with foul trouble. It was tied at 82. Well, it was 82-81, and then Ilyasova hit a couple of free throws. Celtics were right there, and then they missed shots, and then transition three. Missed shot, transition three. Another missed shot, another transition three. It was like boom, boom, boom. And the Celtics lost their ability to first of all, let me just not say it that way. The transition defense was just bad, is basically what it boils down to, Jay. Transition defense was just bad in that stretch.
Yeah, Giannis's free throws kept the Bucks around when the Celtics had a chance to deliver the knockout blow. And then the Bucks went on a huge run super quick when he was on the bench. Celtics can't keep giving up huge runs when Giannis is on the bench. That just can't happen.
In all three games.
And I know the other Bucks can all shoot threes, and I know that they still put stress on a defense when Giannis isn't out there. But it's tough enough to beat the Bucks when you're winning the non-Giannis minutes. When you're giving up an 8-0 run like the Celtics did in Game 3, it's so tough to do that. And it was just boom, just like that. And then the Celtics just kind of crumbled. That's kind of been their MO. When things go bad, they lean back on their worst habits sometimes, and that means they settle for mid-range jumpers, and they're not patient with their offense, and their transition defense suffers sometimes because of that. And it just happens so quickly. And that's what happens against the Bucks. That's what happens against great teams. That's what happens when you lose kind of your poise. And the Celtics did it again, and they did it at home. And that was just not a good response when the Bucks hit hard.
No, it wasn't. And the biggest problem for the Celtics is when they miss, they really struggle. They struggle with that transition defense. But I remember at the end of the season, Brad Stevens kept harping on transition D over and over and over again. And here it is. The second half plus minus, which isn't the biggest indicator of everything, but it was just interesting to see that Giannis was a plus +4, but Chris Middleton was a plus +9. And Chris Middleton in the second half was getting those shots, and he had 16 points in the second half himself, and it was 3 of 4 from three.
One that stood out was the one in that run, the pull-up three.
The pull-up, right in Mook's
Chris
face.
Middleton is one of the best pull-up three-point shooters in the NBA. Even in transition, the goal has to be not to let him shoot a three-pointer.
Yeah.
And Marcus Morris lagged back just a little bit, and Middleton took advantage. And then George Hill, Kyrie got stuck under a screen, and George Hill hit a wide open three. And then Giannis came back in and was running in transition. Jalen helped way off George Hill, and George Hill made him pay.
Yeah.
And that was another big difference. The bench guys for the Bucks, Hill, Connaughton, they made their shots, and the Celtics bench, Ojala hit a couple threes, but not much from Hayward, not much from the other guys. And that's a huge difference, especially at home. You know, the old adage goes that bench guys show up at home, but not on the road. But in this case, it was Milwaukee's bench guys that did a whole lot.
Yeah, they did a ton. I mean, George Hill scored 15 in the second half, which that's inexcusable. They couldn't play George Hill in Cleveland, but he was just so bad. And then here he is, playing much better. I mean, he's healthier, but still, the Connaughton minutes were, I think, some of the most inexcusable minutes for the Celtics. Like, they lost him way too often. Now, one time, it was because Aron Baynes was out there trying to guard a shooter. I forget if it was Bledsoe or I forget who it was, but he had a wing at the top of the key that blew right by him. And then Kyrie tried to slide in and take a charge and the kick, and he didn't get the call, which you might argue that he should have gotten that call, but the kick went out to Connaughton and he got the three. And then Connaughton just stepped into another three off of, I forget who it was, but they just weren't tight enough on D. They kind of went with one guy and didn't go to Connaughton. Letting a guy like that, that's all he does is shoot. You just can't let a guy do the one thing he does well. They just got to be more connected defensively and not get caught so deep on drives, especially that they can't go back and close out and run guys off the line. That's I think the biggest issue games 2 and 3 is they have now let the drives, especially obviously the Giannis drives, suck in the defense so much that they are leaving their responsibilities on the 3-point line. They're getting too far away from those guys, and you can see it when you see the Celtics flying and jumping and trying to challenge the shots by just trying to jump as high as they can. That's when you're out of position. In game one, they were very much in position to dig down, try to slap away at Giannis, get your arms out, stay, you know, create that wall, and then still close out when he passes. They're just not doing that as quickly. They're not working as hard.
Yeah, the one thing that stood out about game one was how many times the Celtics ran one of the Bucks players off the line and forced him to take a dribble and force him into things they're uncomfortable with, whether it was Sterling Brown, Connaughton, Ilyasova. In games 2 and 3, and I think part of it is just because of how dominant Giannis has been, the Celtics haven't had that same those same closeouts. And one play that Brad Stevens has mentioned a couple of times now is the one where Giannis was just dribbling up top and wasn't really doing anything. And Jason Tatum was helping off Mirotić just enough that Giannis flung it over to the corner. And Tatum was just a step too far. Mirotić quick release, bam, three. And Giannis has done a really good job of reading when the Celtics overhelp and making them pay every single time.
Yeah, Giannis is a pretty decent passer, and that's just going to be something that you have to make a choice with Giannis, that you can't let his drives turn into something that are going to be problematic, like on multiple levels. You can't if he's going to drive, then he's going to drive. You just got to let him just. If he's going to score, he's going to score. You can't let the drives then turn into points for somebody else, because now you're creating this environment where all the Bucks are dangerous instead of one of the Bucks is dangerous. And I'd rather take Giannis getting to the rim and scoring 40 than Giannis going to the rim, scoring 28 and having 8 assists like he did in game 3. The Celtics need to just be more alert, be more awake, and work harder. They've just got to work harder on defense to make sure that they're getting to all of their responsibilities. And it's tough to do that when you're so preoccupied with Giannis. I mean, that's what makes the Bucks a 60-win team. That's what makes them so good. Why don't we take a break, and we'll continue this conversation. And also, when we come back, a built-in adjustment for Brad Stevens, the return of Marcus Smart. Question mark, maybe, yes. Marcus Smart could be coming back for Game 4. He's now listed as questionable. We'll talk about it when we come back on the Locked On Celtics podcast. Questions after games, in between games, have a tendency to focus on the offense. The Celtics scored 116 points. I know there were some late points in game 3 because of the fouls leveling out there. But the Celtics did score 116. They they haven't been shut down necessarily. What they've been is outscored. And what they haven't done is been able to really cut down the runs, the Milwaukee runs. Enter potentially Marcus Smart, who could be a guy that you either, if he switches on to Giannis, I mean, it's a guy that can't get back down. It's a guy that could maybe check Eric Bledsoe or Chris Middleton or whichever guy is going off at the time. It's also a guy that can bring energy and, who knows, have an impact on the offensive side too. But defensively, Jay, this could be a big deal and maybe the one built-in adjustment that Brad Stevens can make without having to change anything about how the team plays.
And I think offensively, it'll be a big difference too, because I do think that when the Celtics get disorganized sometimes, Smart brings them back into their organized selves.
Yes.
Like he's not a guy, or maybe he used to be a guy, but he has become a guy who can calm down the Celtics.
Isn't that weird to say? You're 100% right, but we're looking at Marcus Smart to calm down the Celtics.
The former Heat check king, is, but he's really smart and he recognizes mismatches and he knows how to attack them. And that's one thing the Celtics haven't done well at all. Like when Brook Lopez is held up really well against Kyrie Irving and Gordon Hayward, and Al Horford hasn't done anything to beat up on the Bucks' smaller defenders when they switch onto him in the post. And the Celtics have done such a poor job of recognizing where the weakness is and then having the wherewithal to swing it quickly and make quick decisions and take advantage of that. Well, Smart's as good as anybody on their team at doing that. And I want to give credit to Giannis, because Giannis as a help defender is just a bear. He seems to be everywhere sometimes. Like Horford post-ups against smaller guys, well, there's Giannis like sprinting over with his never-ending wingspan and making a play. And so he's kind of kept the Celtics off guard in a lot of ways. And Brook Lopez has limited them at the rim. The Bucks have done a great, great job of taking away paint attempts. But the Celtics just need to do a better job of capitalizing on the times when they do get Lopez on Kyrie, or when they do get Connaughton or Ilyasova or somebody like that on Horford. And they had George Hill on Horford, and Horford sometimes I think he just needs to be more decisive and aggressive. Like if you have George Hill on you, go right up. There was another time Horford caught it right in the basket and probably could have gone up for a layup. I think Eric Bledsoe was coming over and helped defense and threw it out to the corner instead of Terry Rozier. Just go up sometimes, Al. I know Al is a big fan of making the right play, but if you have a chance to get a point, a paint bucket against this Bucks team, you gotta go up and take advantage of it. And the other play that stood out was when Shemmy, like, nobody was paying any attention to Shemmy. They are helping way off Shemmy. And they just totally abandoned him wide open under the bucket. Giannis comes flying in from like 20 feet away and ends up blocking Giannis at the rim, or Shemmy at the rim. And those plays, it's like, what's going on? and those, like the Celtics, they just aren't capitalizing when they do have chances to score.
No, and I think when we look at some of these things that are costing them, I think Smart's ability to kind of run that offense with Kyrie off the ball is going to help a lot. First of all, Kyrie off the ball is going to be a different animal. Like what Smart can do in game four, just by his ability to stand at the top of the key, keep his dribble, direct the traffic, and run a play through to its completion, and have that play include Kyrie Irving coming either a pin down or running the baseline and coming off a couple of screens that way, and just catching the ball on the move and turning, it really does put a different kind of pressure on the Bucks defense. It's going to be really interesting to see how they can handle that if Marcus Smart plays. And look, he's listed as questionable. That means that he's gone through everything that he's gone through, and it's just a matter of, I think, this is my guess, that it's just a matter of, does he wake up and after having gone through whatever three-on-three stuff that he went through at practice on Sunday, does he wake up sore, and does he feel good enough to play? And knowing Marcus Smart, once they open up that sliver, he's going to feel good enough to play. So I feel confident, and I'm surprised because I've been spending so much time saying there's no way he's back for game four. I thought maybe he'd be back for game six. But him being able to run the offense and have Kyrie coming back and catching the ball on the move, and then Smart can go and set picks, and his shot is improved, and he can stand out there and hit some shots. It just brings a different dynamic that's going to put pressure on the Bucks. And if you can do that, and Brad was talking about the attacks and the multiple attacks that you need to break down this Bucks defense. Well, now Kyrie coming off and catching the ball off of a catch rather than just trying to break somebody down off the dribble. Well, that's one attack because he catches, turns, and gets into the middle. Then he kicks. And on that kick, you can work the ball around. If it goes back to Smart, now Smart can drive. And Smart now, and every time you do that, the defense has to move and make decisions. And then you start running the possibility of what's happened to the Celtics a few times is two guys running at one guy, and then you can get yourself some easy shots. I really think it boils down to the Celtics putting that pressure on the Bucks defense to, and like you said, I wrote this note down, be quicker. Don't stand there and wait and let four guys kind of just rest. Be quicker. Move the ball. Get good shots. And that helps defensively, because if the Celtics are getting good shots and they're making some of those shots, then that's fewer transition opportunities. They can go back and set their defense. Game one, Jay, set defense, a lot of set defense. The Celtics shot like, what, 50% in that game? The Bucks against the Celtics half-court defense doesn't work well. All of these runs, all of this time that the Bucks have been running these leads up, all transition buckets, stepping in against cross matches, stepping into shots and getting hot. And I think Smart's return on the offensive side, settling things down, getting them to make shots, can have that extra added impact on the defensive side.
Offensively, I wonder how effective he'll be. And if he's not effective coming off the injury, if he gives a hiding spot for Giannis to just roam off of and ruin the Celtics offense. Like, Giannis, when he doesn't have to pay attention to his guy, just can blow up everything. Mm-hmm. So I'm interested to see what type of form Marcus Smart will come back in and whose minutes he takes and what type of role he'll have the rest of the series. It sounds like at least he thinks he won't have many limitations if he is able to play, but we'll see. And we'll see if his shooting touch is still there. We'll see. There are a lot of factors about Marcus Smart's return. And I think the potential hiding spot for Giannis is one of those. What did you think of Brad's decision to kind of go away from Aaron Baines and to play smaller lineups with Ojeleye at center and Ojeleye instead of Baines guarding Giannis?
Good question, Jay, that I'm going to answer after we take a break. How about that?
Well played.
Stick around. We'll be right back on the Locked On Celtics podcast. I feel like we should play a previously on the Locked On Celtics podcast and then your clip about the Aaron Baines question. But I do think that looking at how he had to guard the perimeter, it didn't work. And I think getting away from that, like he kind of had to. And it's tough because it leaves the Celtics without the ability to protect the rim. Like, you can't playing him instead of Horford, like playing him while Horford's on the floor. The Bucks have been able to put shooters around Giannis, and if you're not going to have Baines like directly on Giannis, and it's going to be tough because it's hard for him to guard Giannis all the way out in the perimeter. If he's switched off and guarding somebody else, it just does not work because he becomes a blow by, and everything that's effective about Aaron Baines just goes away. So I don't mind the move. I think it was kind of necessary, which brings up another point that for all of Budenholzer's previous criticisms, I think that his adjustments have really forced the Celtics into some binds in the second and third games of this series, because he's been able to throw Mirotić out there and throw Ilyasova out there and not necessarily get torched the way we thought that they might when they got those guys. I mean, didn't you think like, oh, you're going to play Mirotić? Fine, no problem. Just attack Mirotić to death. But it hasn't. They have to some degree, but it hasn't cost the Bucks.
Yeah, it hasn't cost the Bucks much at all. And I think sometimes the biggest adjustment is just having Giannis on your team.
Yeah, right.
Like, Giannis allows them to do basically anything. Like, Giannis is just an absolute force. What's so jarring about his minutes against Semi Ojeleye, like, Ojeleye is one of the biggest people I've ever seen in my life. Just absolutely ripped up. Like, literally, you feel like he's going to break the door when he's slamming the medicine ball against it next to the locker room. You can hear it, the thud, like, miles away. And Giannis just goes through him like it's nothing. It's unbelievable how big, strong, and powerful that guy is, on top of all the other things that he does. It's just incredible. I mean, Ojeleye picked up 5 fouls in, like, how many minutes did he play? Like, not too many more than 10?
Yeah, let me see. I'll look it up right now real quick.
5 fouls and just couldn't.
In 11 minutes.
Yeah. And you can't foul Giannis as much as the Celtics have the last couple of games. And I know people are critical of the referees for what they did in game 3, but the Celtics have to do a much better job of defending without fouling.
I will say I agree to a certain extent. Now, 22 free throws is too many, but they can't foul Giannis the way they've been fouling him, which is a lot of touch fouls, a lot of like little ticky-tack things, which I will say, like, it's been tough for the Celtics to kind of know how to defend Giannis, because they were allowed in game 1 to do some things that in games 2 and 3 they haven't been. It's up to the Celtics to adjust. I mean, every basketball player knows that different officials, everybody's going to officiate differently. One of the pieces of advice that I got very early on was, you know, the first thing you do when you're running down the floor is, as a big guy, you just slam into the guy who's defending you and see if the refs are going to call that foul. And if they do, you know, it's going to be a tightly called game. If you don't, then you know they're going to let you play. And it just, that bit of advice is just born from the fact that different officials officiate differently. So the Celtics can say, you know, we used to be able to do this, and now we're not allowed to do that. Well, now you got to figure it out. But if you're going to foul Giannis, then just foul him. Don't just the ticky-tack stuff. Foul him. Make him feel you. Make him understand that going into the lane and getting those points, he's going to earn those points.
I'm not sure Giannis feels, man.
He feels. Like,
Giannis doesn't feel. Giannis bowls people over. Giannis does not. It's like he's an absolute force. And I just think the Celtics, they have to be more solid. They can't be sending him to the line as much as they have. They just need to do a better job of staying strong, holding their ground, and staying straight up. They just have to.
Yeah.
And if they don't, like, he'll shoot another 20 free throws. Like that's what he does. He forces you into that. And I think that's part of what the Celtics have missed all season long, is someone who can, in when they go through droughts, who can end it by forcing the defense into bad situations and forcing the refs into making calls and trying to go get easy points. And that was the story of game three to me. When the Bucks were struggling, Giannis was not going to be denied. He was either going to get to the rim or he was going to make the Celtics foul him. And that was it. And the Celtics didn't have that when they started struggling. And all of a sudden, 2 minutes go by, they haven't scored, and boom, they're down 11 after being up 1 second moments earlier. So they need to be very, very solid against this Bucks team, because when they're not solid, the Bucks and Giannis make them pay on both ends. That goes with defending on the block. That goes with defending in transition. That goes with playing offense. And whenever they settle for a bad shot, they miss it, and the Bucks are boom, going the other way. And their bad offense has turned into bad defense too. And they can't have that. This Bucks team, they'll punish you, and they have punished them the last couple of games.
Yep, that's, and it just boils down to that. Referees are not, calls are not. You have to still go out there and play basketball. And this is why, even after Game 3, when the storyline was the officiating, and the Celtics clearly let some of those calls get to their heads, it really just does not matter. People can scream about it all they want. You can tweet your brains out if you want, but there's another possession right in front of them. There's another play to be made, and to... as a player, you just have to make it. And I don't care how frustrating it is. These are extraordinary athletes. These are people who do things that we can't comprehend physically. They still have to be able to do the same mentally as well. They have to be able to put some of this stuff behind them and get out there and play good, solid defense and not try to rely on jump shots. The Celtics are a jump shooting team, but at some point you gotta run a play and run it through to completion. They had one play, I forget exactly where they'd given up like the 10-0 run or 12-0 run, and Brad called a timeout, and they came out and they ran this play that got Kyrie Irving a layup, and he missed the layup. He got fouled, but that was beautiful. You run a play, set your picks. They ran a couple of picks and set it up so Kyrie could just slip a screen, and boom, it was backdoor, bang, perfect. Loved it. That can be run without having to call a timeout. Like, you can do that stuff without having to stop and have a coach tell you to do it. So the Celtics just have to do it, even in the face of adversity, even in the face of bad calls. Got to just focus on the next thing and execute that next play, because if the Celtics had just done that and put pressure on that Bucks defense, then those runouts don't happen. You stop the run and you prevent that three on the other side, because it's not Chris Middleton dribbling directly into an in-rhythm three. So the Celtics are there. I really do think they're there. They can go out there. They still have a chance to win this series, but not playing the way they played in games 2 and 3. So I think that's a good place to end it. Game 4, unless you've got any other comments.
I got nothing, my G.
Nothing. So we'll just leave it there. I want to thank everybody. Just found out that we just came off of our best week ever. Best week ever, statistically. On the Locked On Celtics podcast. So I want to send a special thank you to everyone who's been listening. All of the new
shouts to the listener gods.
It's awesome. It's been great. I also want to plug a story, because I've got a story coming out in the morning. If you're listening to this late, then it's coming out at it's early in the morning on masslive.com. If you're listening to this somewhere on Monday, go to masslive.com/Celtics. Check out, it's my first big feature story, big, long, like 3,000 plus word feature. It's on Marcus Smart, and it's on his relationship with Jay Larinaga. and a summer that they spent in Miami 2 years ago that led to Marcus Smart's shot kind of becoming what it was this year. It was basically the good shooting that was 2 years in the making, and it all started with a summer in Miami with those two. Kyrie, as a member of the Cavs, was involved in this. It took a lot of work, and I hope you guys enjoyed it. So go check that out on masslive.com/Celtics. Check out Jay's work on The Athletic. I know you got to pay a couple bucks for it, but it's worth it. Jay does a lot of great stuff there. So go subscribe to The Athletic as well. I love people who, like, when you tweet out a link to a story and you're like, oh my God, we got to pay for this. Like, yeah, sometimes you got to pay for things. Like, we got to make our money somehow.
Pay that man his money.
Remember, everybody, subscribe, download the new Himalaya podcast app. Go ahead and subscribe to Locked On Celtics there. You can also subscribe wherever podcasts exist, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify. We are there. We are everywhere. So go ahead and subscribe today. Ask your smart speaker or your smart device in your car to play podcast Locked On Celtics. And all of you regular listeners, that 5-star rating, a good written review always helps us out. And spread the word, share the podcast, tell everybody to listen to the Locked On Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network. Yeah, Corrales, Packard, and J. King.